Welcome to Rebellion Dogs Radio. Thanks for coming back, or thanks for checking us out if you're brand new. We look at history quite a bit here. Now, why? We call this podcast a contemporary look at recovery and addiction, maybe even future gazing into where the world of addiction and recovery should be going. So that's true. Why history? Isn't that looking in the rearview mirror? Yuval Noah Harari, PhD author of Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind. What he says is, history is not the study of the past. History is a study of change. It's not about remembering the past. It's about liberating ourselves from it. So welcome to Rebellion Dogs Radio, episode number 75. We're going to focus on Alcoholics Anonymous, how the fellowship is grappling with changing times, some change-resistant tendencies, and the need to adapt. We look at demographic shifts based on new membership data, a desire to appeal to underrepresented populations, and a call out to members for marching orders. The debate is now on. It's up to members. Preserve the wording of primary language of long dead founders, or rewrite a contemporary narrative of the Alcoholics Anonymous recovery story. From alcohol use disorder to recovery in today's language. We look at 2023, the year that was, and what's ahead for 2024 and beyond. There's three things we're going to look at, really. And I am definitely looking for your feedback. First, new stories of AA diversity today are needed. They're needed to update a 48-year-old pamphlet called Do You Think You're Different? So we're going to talk about an opportunity to tell your story. Number two, there's the 2022 membership survey. It was much anticipated. The results are posted. It's current data on AA for all to see, counselors, healthcare, and criminal court diversion professionals who refer people to AA. It's for the general public. And last but not least, it's for AA members. It kind of shows us how we're doing. From our home groups to the USA-Canada General Service Conference, it tells us how we're reaching those who want or need AA. Is AA equitable? Is it effective? In this survey, there's information for the first time about USA-Canada AA's use of online meetings and our preferences. Finally, there are these seven questions for you. By you, I mean all AA members. They're being asked by AA's Trustees Literature Committee. They want your answer, and they want you to think about these things, mail them in. And it's about literature. Do we preserve the integrity of the original message? Or do we widen our gateway by changing our primary literature? We have these seven questions later in this show. If you're someone in recovery and you were helped by peer-to-peer, maybe AA specifically, did you immediately feel at home at your first meeting? Or did you feel different? Different than the group you were exposed to? If you felt or feel different, we have a humble writing assignment for you as our first topic. So I mentioned the AA Literature Desk wants your story, 500 to 800 words. Do You Think You're Different came out in 1976. It's pamphlet number 13. Now, this tipped the scale in my own should I stay or should I go sobriety. If you don't know this collection of AA stories, please click the link in our show notes. There are 13 essays of people who felt marginalized, a teenager, an atheist, someone from the clergy, high bottom, low bottom, movie star, a person of color, LGBTQIA background. They share the barriers to recovery they saw and bridges or the ways they've been able to navigate or find their rightful seat in AA as a peer, as an equal. Now, for me, in 1976, I was a teenager, so hearing the story of a 15-year-old made a difference to me. I was happy to read about Ed, an AA atheist, a real atheist. That's an Ed the Atheist joke for those of you who read the 12 and 12. And Jan, the AA agnostic. So what they had to say about sobriety without an anthropomorphic personal higher power, that landed with me. Oh, okay, good. Because I wasn't fighting people on that. I was just hiding out in plain view, telling people what I thought they wanted to hear. But I was planning my escape. It's a great pamphlet, and it's too old. For instance, today's teenager doesn't have any use for a 1970s teenager angst story. It would be so unrelatable. You go through this pamphlet, you know, leaving gender identification pronouns and all of the sort of references that are in there alone to widen the gateway in the 21st century, this literature needs to be updated to reflect the diversity of AA in this third decade of this 21st century. So if you or someone you know is not the white male heteronormative middle class majority that the membership survey, which we're going to talk about shortly, reveals as the best served demographic in AA, then someone's got to write their story. Let it be heard. Maybe you feel different. Maybe you feel different light or not marginalized enough. I don't know. Maybe you are, maybe you're not. Either way, please consider throwing your hat in the ring by adding your story to the pile. They will only pick a few from the many that are submitted, but they can only choose from the stories they have, so please send yours in. It could matter to somebody else. This could be a leaflet or pamphlet that helps many. Do you think you're different? Definitely help me. Again, from our show notes, we've got links to the existing pamphlet and where you go to submit your story. Please consider that. So it was written. Are the writings of Bill Wilson sacred to AA? If you want to get an AA area assemblies members, if you want to get their remaining hair on fire, bring up changing the wording in the big book in the first 164 pages. Now, there's the apathetic majority, the middle of AA, but beyond them, as my friend Bob Kay says, there are those who want us to go back to 1939 and those who think we're already stuck in 1939. I get it. I've heard those concerns and pleas from both camps. I suggest that there is this silent majority, the apathetic middle of the road whose sobriety isn't and wasn't informed by book learning in AA. Using myself as an example, the words of Bill Wilson were neither a comfort nor a barrier because I learned AA from the fellowship, one AA member talking to another one-on-one in plain contemporary language, whether it was from the podium, whether it was in a discussion group, or just over coffee. There was no instructions by the book, not the way I learned about AA. Wasn't my experience. Wasn't how the AA message was brought to me. It was the experience of others, their own trial and correction, the hope and connection and sense of belonging from people alive today, or at the time for me. People with substance use disorder, such as alcohol, in the case of many AAs. This was my classroom. This was how and what informed my own recovery. I know others were brought up in a sort of 12-step culture that was, by the book, instructional in an orderly fashion. The steps are in an order for a reason. This is how the original 100 members, yada, 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 I know that. And I respect that it's worked for many. Also, there are many like myself that aren't emotionally attached to a book that either aids or frustrates our recovery, because that's not how we learned about it. So what's between the covers of the book next year will not likely change my life one way or another. Some of you, your identity or story, it's connected to being uplifted by or marginalized as a result of the words of AA literature. The "we must change or fade to obscurity" camp, and the "we must preserve the integrity of the message and not water AA down" camp, they both love AA and want it to last forever. They love it as much as I do. They care about alcoholics and other people who suffer from substance use disorder, just like I do. They just disagree on how to get there. So these two camps, they disagree. They may or may not be suspicious that the other camp is delusional or dangerous, but they're pretty sure they're right anyway. So if you're directly affected by this issue because the literature matters a lot, or you're just an AA member, you're a stakeholder, and the people who serve the membership, you and me, they want their marching orders from us, as it should be in a chaotic, upside-down service structure triangle type of fellowship that we're in. AA's General Service Conference is currently seeking each of our opinions. Should we or shouldn't we? What follows, I'm going to read out the 7 questions, and I'll tell you how I answered them, and I hope you tell me how you would answer them. I hope this gets a discussion going. And I'll tell you where to mail your answers and where to pick up the questionnaire. So, here's 1 of 7. Do you think that AA founders would object to or embrace revisions to their writing? If yes, why? If not, why? 2. Do you think the founders' writings are effective in reaching new members? If not, what measures do you think can be taken to resolve this issue? 3. What reasons would you consider for changing our founders' writings? 4. How do you feel about changing AA's founders' writings or replacing outdated references? 5. What suggestions do you have for preserving the founders' writings along with keeping pace with our current AA society and its future? 6. Should there be a specific conference process for approval of changes of our founders' writings? For example, a super or qualified majority requiring 75% of all members to agree, and or a 2-year consideration process for us to talk about it before we decide. And 7, what additional ideas, thoughts, or suggestions can you share about changing or not changing our founders' writings? So we'll go through them. I'll tell you what I've already sent mine in. I'll tell you what I said. Do you think AA's founders would object to or embrace revisions to their writings? I say, no, they wouldn't object. Why? The 1953 General Service Conference speech by Bill Wilson commented on groups and members who were already altering the steps. Bill Wilson referred to them as carrying on the same pioneering process we had to go through ourselves, and concluded about changing texts that if improvements are to come, who can say where they're going to come from? And to two, do you think the founders' writings are effective at reaching new members? If not, what measures do you think can be taken to resolve this issue? And I said, AA has been stuck at 2 million members all century long. We're keeping old-timers happy, and we're not appealing to new people. AA has shrunk in membership everywhere other than the United States of America. Our primary literature is religious, dated, and irrelevant in the eyes of newcomers. Three was, what reason would you consider for changing our founders' writings? And I said, more has been revealed. A good idea would be a quinquennial revised doctor's opinion. Let's put a new one in every 5 years. Let's replace the misogyny and add non-Abrahamic versions of the steps, Hindu, Islamic, Buddhist, secular. Question four was, how do you feel about changing AA founders' writings to replacing outdated references? And here I say, do not replace. Preserve the original 164 for fundamentalists and for historical purposes, but also create a contemporary basic text, update it every 5 years. Then we can revisit this question in 20 years to see what's more effective. Five was, what suggestions do you have for preserving the founders' writings along with keeping pace with our current AA's society and its future? One original text, let's keep it. Go back to the 1939 version if that's what everybody wants. And one five-year cycling variation of the big book. Grade 5 math doesn't change every 5 years, does it? But school boards update the language of their mathematical textbooks to keep pace with best teaching standards, trial and correction, cultural demographic shifts. If AA books are basic texts and not a historical document for scholars, then we can follow what the rest of the world does, using math books as just a suggestion. Six, should there be a specific conference process for approval of changes of our founders' writings? Should it require a 75% majority in order to make any change? Or should we have a 2-year consideration process? And I suggest you avoid the whole binary controversy with this yes or no thing, or this either or. Let's do yes and. Keep the fundamentalists happy by having the old version preserved, and encourage the freethinkers to stay by offering something new and subject to change at their whim. And seven is, what additional ideas, thoughts, or suggestions can you share about changing or not changing the founders' writings? As stated about changing or not changing, that's not a very creative solution. Add ideas. Don't divide members. If everybody dead before the turn of the century is a founder, then also consider modernizing Came to Believe in Living Sober too. Living Sober is the only defendable irreligious literature we have. Those 31 chapters could use a 21st century freshening up. Talk about online meetings. Take a look at the pronouns. Use contemporary touchstones. Be more international. Came to Believe could offer humanist, non-theistic essays along with Hindu, Islamic, or Buddhist references to coming to believe and the whole idea of higher power. It doesn't have to be a male higher power, intervening singular God that Bill Wilson believed in to be AA. Maybe this focus on this sort of religious approach to recovery from alcoholism, this prayer answering sobriety granting God, is the reason that AA is smaller now than it was at the turn of the century, at least outside of the United States of America. And then I give my name, my phone number, and that I'm from Area 83, District 10, Ontario, Canada. Now about the survey, the membership survey, why do we do one? It's an initiative, originally, this goes back to the 60s, by our public information desk to provide answers to the type of questions professionals, healthcare, human resources, people who would make referrals to AA. What do they want to know about AA? As well as the press or curious members of the general public. It's demographic questions that look at diversity of race, gender, age. It looks at length of sobriety. How long have the people in an average AA meeting been sober? How many are sober less than a year? How many are sober over 10 years, for instance? It looks at the background of members, how people find out about AA, how many meetings we go to, how many of us have and use a sponsor or have a home group. Also useful is it helps us help ourselves. How effective are we at reaching and resonating with people across the cultural divide as far as race, gender, age, groups, etc. are concerned? So it's kind of a personal inventory for AA as a whole. And this is just a shout out because I couldn't find the source of this, not in the 2023 General Service Conference final report, but I also saw, and many of you have seen it as well, a 2023 survey. It was called the 2023 AA Membership Survey, Convenience Sample Number 1, and it was put out on SurveyMonkey, and it seemed to come directly from GSO. In fact, at General Service, I could see that it said, it gave a link to it in Box 459, News and Notes from General Service, mentioning that it closed at midnight Eastern Standard Time on November 26, 2023. So it's closed now, but they had this online survey people can take. And I don't know why, having done a membership survey in 2023, why they're doing this. Maybe they're just experimenting with online results versus the current process of sending packages out to a certain percentage of the groups in each of the districts, or not each of the districts, but each of the areas throughout Canada and the United States. The membership survey of 2022, it's not a worldwide study. It is strictly for the groups and the members that the General Service Conference directly serves, which is U.S. and Canada. There were more than 6,000 AA members randomly selected and surveyed in 2022. And as I mentioned, this has been conducted periodically, usually every 3 years since 1968, providing a snapshot of AA and its members. The survey is not a census. The survey results may be of interest to professionals, community, the media, and the general public. Anybody who wants to know about AA. So that's what it says right on the website. In January of 2023, I did a presentation for an AA group called Growing in Understanding. It's a group that has a particular interest in history and topics of interest to the membership. So there's a lot of presentations on a lot of different things. And so I was asked to do this presentation on research I'd done in the General Service about the historical background of this Canada USA membership survey. I also talked about the 2020 Great Britain membership survey, which was the first to cover the pandemic, online meetings, that type of thing. You can go to YouTube. Again, we've got links in the show notes and see the slide deck and the audio on the Rebellion Dogs YouTube page. So the April General Service Conference, there was a report on the 2022 survey, and they just shared a little of what was discussed, what was found out, questions still to be answered. One of the things they talked about was online groups. Online groups are welcome in AA, and they want them to be included. It was shared that there is a desire in the fellowship for clarity and guidance, a thirst to know what we're supposed to do in the sort of online world. Here's some of the talking points at the General Service Conference. Are they groups that transition from live to online and virtual? Do you know if they intend to stay in whatever their current format is? Some online groups were in-person meetings before the pandemic and have chosen to remain virtual. Other groups decided to convert to a hybrid platform after the pandemic. An in-person group transitioned online. Half of the group wants to remain online, while the other half wants to return to in-person. The majority of current online groups that have been asked say they're going to stay virtual. We have many that are now structured and are not interested in becoming part of the General Service Conference. Groups don't have to. They're welcome to. They're not required to. There continue to be new online groups developed for the purpose of reaching more people outside the area that the original founders of the group live in. A lot of new groups have transitioned from in-person to online or hybrid. Most areas, like the current area structure that is geographic, they are open to online groups and plan to make available, you know, GSRs. And in the case of my area, they're looking at having a dedicated district to online groups that have no brick-and-mortar presence. A lot of the members have a strong resistance to online assemblies. The old guard likes the face-to-face. Some groups and meetings seem to want to meet without any connection to the district, area, and AA as a whole, as mentioned above. Seeing a substantial decline in online groups and online groups going dark as they move back to in-person groups. Some people with accessibility issues have opted to remain connected online as independent groups. Some AA members seem to prefer to meet online, whether for convenience or safety or due to the difficulties of finding trusted servants. The question was asked, to the best of your knowledge, do online groups in your area have members from multiple districts, from outside of your area, or from other countries? So all of the delegates were asked this question. 76% said yes, 24% said no. Members of the group included local members and others from around the world. This is the answer of one particular delegate. The group is trying to figure out where they belong, where they should send their seventh tradition contributions, etc. Another said, most of them have members from all over the U.S. and in some cases other countries. One delegate reported, most of their online groups started in the U.S. and in some cases they've got members from other countries. This is primarily due to them sharing the meeting codes on social media. One delegate, from the groups in our area, they've been encouraged to just use the traditions to guide them, to consider what district or area to join, where to send their seventh tradition, so on and so forth. So the results of the survey are out, and what do we find? Let's look at demographics. We'll look at race first. White or Caucasian population in the 2014 survey, the last one that was taken, was 89% of AA identified as white. In 2022, the result has improved marginally to 87.7%. So a percent and a bit better. Does the disparity between Caucasians and people of color in AA make you wonder? It does rightly raise the question of systemic barriers, discrimination, microaggression lurking in our meetings and messaging. Also, it's complicated. In terms of trends, the 2022 survey adds two more categories of race, Pacific Islanders and multiracial. So there were five choices or other, and now there are seven choices or other. Comparing AA to another 12-step environment, there's a 2018 Narcotics Anonymous survey. There, 70% of their respondents identify as white, Caucasian, 13% black, African American, 7% Hispanic or Latin, 4% multiracial, 2% Asian, 1% indigenous, and 1% other. NA stats were compiled mostly from the World Convention of NA in Orlando in 2018, and there were some online responses captured. They actually gathered responses from 28,000 members, and it's more global than our USA Canada. It included 27 European countries and Russian participants as well. Over half of AA's members live in the U.S., so let's compare the membership and the membership survey to the general population in the United States of America, according to census data. 59% of Americans are Caucasian white. 18.9 are Hispanic or Latin, 12.6 black or African American, 5.9% Asian, 2.3% multiracial, 0.7% indigenous or Native American, 0.2% Pacific Hawaii, and 0.5% would fall into other. On its face, AA isn't as comfortable or effective for people of color. The disparity in Narcotics Anonymous isn't as stark, but there's still a difference compared to the U.S. data. But we have to consider other data, too. SAMHSA, which is Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, that offers a little bit of context. They say that the estimate of the past year substance use disorder among people aged 12 or older was higher for American, Indian, or Alaskan Native people, 11.2%, than the estimates for people in all other racial ethnic groups, except those reporting two or more races. The estimate of past years substance use disorder was higher for white people, 7.8%, than the estimates for black, Hispanic, and Asian people, 7.1%, 7.1%, and 4.1%, respectively. Alcohol use disorder is broken out separately in their data, but they report the same disparity race to race of addiction compared to people along racial lines. Other data reveals that people of color, when entering treatment, are less likely than their white counterparts to complete treatment. Socioeconomic and healthcare status are disproportionate also among whites versus people of color in America. And SAMHSA takes that into account. Like comparisons among race, gender drinking habits and outcomes differ as well. The National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism compares this in the United States, and they report that more males and females drink each year, 68% of males compared to 64% females. Male drinkers tend to drink more often and more heavily than females do, consuming nearly three times as much pure alcohol per year, 19 liters for males compared to 6.5 liters for females. And they measure this in liters. That's interesting to me. More males, 7%, than females, 4%, are diagnosed with alcohol use disorder each year. Noteworthy, alcohol affects women and men differently. From their website, males still consume more alcohol and experience and cause more alcohol-related injuries and deaths than females do. But the gaps are narrowing. Among adolescents and emerging adults, gaps in drinking have narrowed primarily because alcohol use among males has declined more than alcohol use among females. Among adults, alcohol use is increasing for women, but not for men. Rates of alcohol-related emergency department visits, hospitalizations, and deaths all have increased among adults during the past two decades. Consistent with the changing patterns of alcohol use, increasing in these outcomes have been larger for women. Recent studies also suggest that females are more susceptible than males to alcohol-induced liver inflammation, cardiovascular disease, memory blackouts, hangovers, and certain types of cancer. So, looking at the disparity in males and females in the AA survey this year, by the way, 63.94% are male, 35.45% are female, 0.46 are non-binary, neither both gender fluid or non-conforming, and there are 0.15 who answered other. So this also compares to the 2024 survey, the last one done, that only asked the binary question, are you male or are you female, not offering any other options. So kudos. Is AA sexist? Is AA racist? Is that the reason why we have underrepresented populations in AA? Well, I'll take on the question first this way. My home group has more men than women attending. My AA group does not culturally and ethnically reflect the tapestry of the community just outside our doors. My AA home group is whiter, more Caucasian as a percentage than the city of Toronto, for instance. So, am I racist? Am I sexist? I'm a member of my group, and my group doesn't properly reflect societal norms. How can I point a finger at AA as a whole without taking my own personal inventory regarding my privilege and efforts to correct inadequacies in my own home group? We can all ask the same question and remember equity begins at home, at our home group, that is. In a Pew Research study in 2019, Americans were asked about racial equality. While 56% agreed race relations in the U.S. are generally bad, 71% of people who identify as black agreed with that statement, while only 56% of whites agreed. A greater divide was found in the question of, does the legacy of slavery of the past inform the position of black people in America today? Another question, when asked, our country hasn't gone far enough in giving blacks equal rights with whites, yes or no, 78% of black people agreed. 37% of white people agreed. The average was 45%. So that's a huge divide about whether the country's gone far enough about creating equal rights. So as the experience of racism for people of color differs from the experience of racism for whites in America, I conclude that the racism or sexism I don't face as a white male AA member looks different to me than AA members who face it in our messaging, in AA literature, and in our meetings, our rituals, and the culture there. I've got biases. They're based on my experience of white male privilege. While I don't see myself as misogynist or racist, I consider myself being an ally, but that isn't a label. That's a behavior. So what am I doing to help create more equity in my own home group? Well, not enough in my own home group, the way it looks. The statistics in AA, they point to the presence of systemic prejudice. That's true in my home group. It's true in AA as a whole. How can that be, and what can I do to correct it? In a Harvard Business Review, How to Promote Racial Equality in the Workplace, this was 2020, Robert Livingston reveals something we know about. Denial isn't a river in Egypt. Willful blindness of what our survey clearly tells us, racism exists in AA, is like not admitting we have a problem with drinking. Some of us call that kind of denial insane. Some of what the Harvard Business Review reports out is the following 6 points. 57% of all whites and 66% of working class whites consider discrimination against whites to be as big a problem as discrimination against people of color. People's beliefs, like the idea that white discrimination is as serious as it is for people of color. People who believe that, be they employees in a company or members of a fellowship, that can undermine an organization's efforts to address racism and support diversity policies. Some leaders acknowledge racism in society and fail to see it in their own organization. So this is true in business. It's hard to believe it wouldn't be true in AA too. Seemingly, race-neutral policies can enable discrimination. Commitment to diversity is seen as absence of racial discrimination. Studies find that organizations with strong commitments to diversity continue to discriminate. Blacks and ethnic minorities are more likely to be ignored or harshly treated when they raise valid concerns about racism. And white people's denial of active racism comes from the erroneous idea that racism is defined by deliberate actions motivated by malice or hatred. Racism can occur without conscious awareness or intent. So it takes effort. And AA shows great willingness to help those in need, at least in some areas. Harvard Business Review, this article points to three sequential stages to correcting the problem. The first is admit you have a problem. Our survey shows that systemic discrimination makes AA a happy place for white heteronormative males, and we have them overrepresented in our membership. Why isn't AA a happy place for the underrepresented people, such as women or people of color? Having admitted we have a problem, we have to take further inventory. The second phase of correcting discrimination is concern. And we need empathy, not sympathy. In AA's safety statement, safety and AA are common welfare, it recognizes that, quote, problems found in the world can also be found in our AA meetings, including racial discrimination, discrimination about sexual orientation, or gender intolerance. These experiences can affect whether someone feels safe or returns to the group. So we've done some work in safety in AA, and one of the things we've found is that discrimination exists in AA. How could we correct it? If every AA conference every year invited a panel of BIPOC members, Black, Indigenous, people of color, to share about their experience of AA and racism inside AA, wouldn't that help grow more empathy among the general membership, hearing one alcoholic talking to another? Now, that same breakthrough could come from panels of women, non-binary and gender-fluid members talking about sexism, as well as the LGBTQIA plus members talking about phobia and ignorance and its effect on their AA experience. Once understood and felt, correcting discrimination requires two things: strategy and sacrifice. A point driven home in the Harvard article is the real challenge for organizations is not figuring out what can we do, but rather, are we willing to do it? So am I being critical, overly critical? Admitting we have a problem and measuring it, that's a good start. I offered USA Census data for context, and over half of AA lives in the United States, so that makes sense. Yes, AA cares about this, and yes, we can do more. Why spend money on public service announcements that portray ethnic, age, and gender diversity in AA if we're not also spending time, money, and effort to amending our rituals and readings that make these newcomers feel like they don't belong and not staying? We want them to stay. We want to enrich the tapestry of the group and the fellowship as a whole. AA is making an effort. It is asking these questions. It's at least taking a look at where we stand. I mentioned that our survey added information about how virtual AA gatherings are diversifying how we deliver the AA message and adding accessibility. It's easier to leave a Zoom meeting than it is to bail in the middle of an in-person meeting where you're in a circle of chairs and everyone is looking at you. So because virtual meetings are easier to leave, for the same reason, they're less of a barrier for trying AA for the first time. We're still in the pioneering area of virtual AA, but our survey will tell us how we're doing going forward in the future. I can tell you that our virtual AA home group has more newcomers and more visitors than we did when we were an in-person group. We've gone back to meeting at our University of Toronto classroom, but we're going to continue the virtual meetings indefinitely. Now, another great addition to this most recent membership survey is we measure not only how long members have been away from their last drink, like the Great Britain membership survey that I've talked about before, we also ask in the 2022, not only how long since your last drink, but how long have you been in recovery? How long have you been a member? So comparing how long since your last drink and when did you first come to AA, for people who answered less than a year, people who first came to AA, that's 13% of us. And people who answered It's less than a year since my last drink. That's 23% of us. In 1 to 5 years, 15% for first came to AA and 20% for since my last drink. 5 to 10 years, it's almost identical, 12 and 13%. It's almost identical for 10 to 20, 19 and 20%. And in the 20-year plus, 41% of people first came to AA 20 years or more ago, and only 16% of people say their last drink was 20 years ago or more. So there it's pretty significant. AA's average 2 meetings a week. That's what we go to. There are certain attributes members gravitate to when choosing a group, and that's asked about in this membership survey. So, what attributes are we looking for? Members like me, 54%. Meetings in a certain language, 29%. Accessibility, 22%. And additional characteristics they look for, they were able to answer a variety. 25% say there are other attributes they look for in a meeting. 8 out of 10 have a sponsor, 2 out of 10 do not. 9 out of 10 have a home group, 1 out of 10 do not. In 2022, 75% of members had attended online meetings. 79% prefer face-to-face, 2% prefer virtual, and 19% have no preference one way or another. The average AA is older than in our 2014 survey. Currently, the average age is 52 years old. And our under 21s is 0.2%. 21 to 30 is 9%. 31 to 40 is 16%. 41 to 50 is 20%. The largest demographic is our 51 to 60 population, 25%. 61 to 70 is 19%. And 71 plus, 11% of members. Now, I talked about a presentation I did back in January 2023 for the Growing and Understanding group, and I presented my primary document research from the archives of AA. And I was reading minutes from PI committees. I was looking at all of the archival AA membership survey pamphlets since 1968. Also included in the presentation I gave in January was the Great Britain 2020 membership survey, as I mentioned before. And they asked for the first time about virtual AA. It was very early in the COVID shelter-in-place reality for AA. It was through 2020 that they were asking membership about, meetings. So they added these questions about virtual meetings. And you can hear my interview with the non-alcoholic trustee and chair of the survey committee, Manny Metacondi, about the process of doing the survey. That's on Rebellion Dogs Radio. It's called Our Discussion with a Non-Alcoholic Trustee, AA's 2020 Membership Survey from the General Servants Conference of AA Great Britain. And it, I believe, is Rebellion Dogs Radio number 68, I think. Their survey asked a series of questions that I would like the USA Canada survey to start asking each round of surveys. They asked, do you believe in a higher power? And for those who answered yes, they asked, what's your conception of a higher power? Is it secular or is it religious? Manny's a clinical psychologist himself, and he was saying that these are the types of questions that referring professionals would want to know about AA before sending clients to us. Also, the Growing and Understanding presentation, the audio and slide deck, as I mentioned, is available on the Rebellion Dogs Publishing YouTube page. And I'll make sure there's a link for that. Now, to do that research, I had to apply to GSO, get approved, fly to New York, find and pay for accommodations. They gave me my own room in AA Archives, where they brought me everything I wanted to read, recordings I wanted to listen to, but I could not record, copy, or photograph any archival material. I could write down as much as my heart desired. They were generous at the head office in AA. It was great. I had a wonderful experience. But it was quite an ordeal to go through. Like if I was saying, hey, you should go check this out too, you might think twice about it. Now, I'm very glad to share that as a result of this new survey and the way it's being presented, AA is going to save you the time of an arduous trip. They have an interactive display of the 2020 survey results, what I've talked about and more. And it also includes a link to every single triennial survey so you can compare from your own laptop or any other device all of the surveys through all of the years. You can look at, you know, the year you got sober or the year your dad got sober or whatever, and just see what the demographics were at the time and the types of questions they ask. How great is that? Feel free to listen to my presentation, which gives some contextual examples of my own sobriety journey. For instance, I got sober. I came to AA in 1974. I got sober in 1976. So the next survey they did since I was coming around was 1977. And back then, to show you how different that was, people who were sober 5 years or more in 1977 were between 20% and 30%. And today, half of the members are sober at least 5 years. That's considered long-term sobriety by researchers. Back in 1977, 11.3% were in their teens or 20s. 51.9% were 31 to 50 years old. That was the biggest demographic at the time. And in total, like they didn't go all the way out to 70 plus, but they had, of their over 50 members, like our average member is 52 now, only 35% of members were 50 or older back then. So about two-thirds of AA members were under 50 years. Between the 1974 and 1977 survey when I got sober, they reported in the 77 survey that the under 30 population had doubled in those 3 years. So young people and early to mid-term sobriety, this was the majority of members at the vast majority of meetings, where now the vast majority of members in meetings today are sober 10 years or 20 years or what have you. AA looks quite different than it did then. Not better or worse, but definitely a different tone. So I shared with you my gut reaction to the new survey results, which I could not help but compare the demographics a newcomer to AA would encounter today compared to my own experience when I got here. So my attention was drawn to the decrease, a dramatic decrease in youth in AA. I got here, 1% of AAs were under 20. So if you met 200 AA members over the course of a week or a month, you'd meet at least one other person your age by the numbers. Identification, that causes connection, that gives rise to hope and improves outcome rates. Now, currently, under half of 1% of AAs are under the drinking age, as I was. I say that because I noticed that, and our public information committee, they compared the numbers too and noticed the same thing. one of the reasons they do these surveys is to take a look at things. And what did they do? They created a public service announcement targeting teenage alcoholics. What else did they see? They saw that one of the attributes people are drawn to in finding meetings is a place where people are just like me. So that's important for newcomers. So another PSA was created to dramatize this experience, something people can connect with, people like me. So let's listen to two PSAs that are created. One is called Young, Everything Just Got Crazy, and the second, People Just Like Me. They're super short. And this is what GSO, our General Service Office, does to respond to this new data. Now, GSO in New York City may be far away from your hometown or your home group or mine, but they are limited to how they can impact outreach in your town or my town. But we can use these PSAs as members of a local public information committee or our own home group initiative. Does your home group have a website or any sort of social media? You can create a web page. You can use multimedia. There's no rules against that. You can use these PSEs to help target people who may be underrepresented in your own home group. An AA group can have a Twitter or a YouTube page, you know, respecting anonymity. It can have its own podcast. Why not? We're not helpless. What did Yuval Noah Harari say about studying our history? History is a study of change. It's not about remembering the past. It's about liberating ourselves from it. In the same way, we can try new things out. All of us want to be inclusive. None of us intentionally reinforce the same systemically discriminatory practices that create obstacles for people who may not see or hear people just like them. So what can we do to support them? These public service announcements aren't a panacea, but they can be used by us, and they may also inspire other ideas. Any group can make their own public service announcements and use them as they see fit. So let's just listen to these. And if they inspire ideas in you, I'd like to hear about them. Let's just listen to these two short PSAs.
I grew up in a normal home in a normal town. All of a sudden, everything got crazy. I didn't talk to anybody about the way I was feeling. I was scared and I was alone. I started drinking. I just didn't want to deal with what was happening in my life. I knew about AA, but thought I was too young. I found out I was wrong. If you have a problem with your drinking, why don't you give AA a call?
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app.
Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought all the people that I knew who didn't drink were self-righteous people, holier than thou. So it never occurred to me that Alcoholics Anonymous was filled with people who had drank like I did, and now were the same people that I used to drink with, the same people that I liked, only now they weren't drinking. They were people just like me who had been drinking for a long time and found out that it didn't work for them anymore.
One more. This one's kind of a middle-of-the-road one. It's called A Richer Life. Now, would this have broken through to an alcoholic like me who only saw sobriety as what they were giving up as opposed to what recovery had to offer? Maybe. Let's listen.
There I was in my business suit, all dressed up, just uptight as I could possibly be. And I don't remember much of what was said at that first AA meeting. It was more the feeling of the meeting itself.
That's what has kept me going. I know it works, and I see the people ahead of me with more sobriety. I see how happy they are, and I want that. I want that too.
And what I notice about AA is it sort of helps me to relax and learn to really be happy with my sobriety. It's a richer life to live.
That's exactly what Alcoholics Anonymous does. It teaches us how to live without drinking. It teaches us how to have fun and really enjoy life without drinking.
This program's given me the good life. The only good life I've ever known.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the meeting guide app to find
a
meeting near you.
Anyway, there's some food for thought. So there's a link to this, but if you are just listening or driving when you get home, www.aa.org/membership-survey-2022. And there's a link there that will take you to those past surveys, which is also www.aa.org/past-surveys. And you'll have them all there. Save yourself a trip to New York. Now, my heart goes out to all of you who serve AA as a whole. This was a busy year, and thanks for everything. And for those of you who are listening, be sure to answer GSO's call to action. Tell your story if you think you're different. To get some idea about the story length and feel, you should look at the current Do You Think You're Different pamphlet. It's P13, and you can find it on the AA.org. Just look under Literature Pamphlets and look for Do You Think You're Different. You can download a free PDF, read those stories, think about writing your own. I think that'd be great. And if you care about AA's messaging, if we should preserve or replace or add new literature, stop bitching, start typing. Remember, the 7-question link has to be mailed, snail mail. You would mail that to the Trustees Literature Committee, AA General Service Office, Box 459, Grand Central Station, New York, New York, USA, zip code 10163, and we'll have a link to those 7 questions, or you can write them down from this podcast. As is our tradition, we always go out with a little independent music. Today we're going to go to Ellis. Ellis is a performance name who's earned praise from Billboard and Pitchfork. The debut EP came out in 2018. Then there was Born Again, the debut album, in 2020. 2021 was another EP. They did some co-writing, a song called Vicious Circle with Chastity. It also featured City in Color. They've been touring with Alves and Soccer Mommy. There will be new tour dates announced soon. More new music will be arriving in 2024. You can go to ellis.songs.com for more information. And this little sample of what's to come isn't One Day at a Time. It's a song called Forever. So enjoy the song. Visit us at rebelliondogspublishing.com. Add your comments, suggestions, ideas, call bullshit, whatever you need to do. We want to hear from you because one person talking isn't a conversation. Thanks for being part of Rebellion Dogs Radio. We'll see you soon. This is Ellis. The song is Forever. Doesn't feel mine.
been thinking about the long goodbyes. You couldn't stay.